This is 1360 AM.
WNJC, Washington Township, Philadelphia. Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station.
Brought to you
from Forsyth Broadcasting.
Or listen to us at WNJCRadio.com.
Practice Preparedness with your host, Will Hemingway, coming to you every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Yeah, see, I used to do a show on here every Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m., yeah. So I could roll that one right out. See that? But anyway, so tonight we're going to do our primary topic, but that does not lock us into just that topic, is we're going to talk a little bit about surviving in place and bugging out. So yesterday we did a really great class. Actually, I didn't end up teaching most of it last night. One of my really great co-hosts for one of my meetup.com groups, the South Jersey Survival Skills, we had a class down in Williamstown, and he did a first part of what we're going to do is probably going to turn out to be four parts, I bet, by the time we get done, of a survival first aid. And Jim came in and did a really awesome job last night. We got to tourniquet everybody. The only unfortunate thing is I was going to use the tourniquet on somebody's neck just to see how it worked.
Okay, but, all right. Let's not do that, okay? Let's keep it safe.
We were going to try, but, you know, see, I mean, they say it stops blood flow, and the head has, you know, profuse bleeding when you get a head wound.
If it was me, I'd just take their word for it. I wouldn't exactly put it into practice.
You don't have to crank it five times just till they pass out. You
just
know?
Just till they pass
it's
out.
All good.
Okay.
So, but it was a great evening of real learning and some hands-on experience for everybody that came down. If you don't know, I'm Will Hemingway. Practice Preparedness is based on my my operations. We are a survival and preparedness training company in the South Jersey and Philadelphia area. We reach out all over the country. We do both online webinars and hands-on classes for both businesses and churches and schools and everything else in between. We have a group of people who are very well seasoned, who run the gambit in everything from risk management across the board to preparedness on the professional side, and that along with wilderness survival and all kinds of outdoor skills, blacksmithing and such. So if you have any interest, if you go to our website at practicepreparedness.com, you'll find a couple of forums on there where you can contact us if you have questions or if you're interested in us doing a program with your organization or your company. We'll be glad to talk to you about it. So tonight I want to talk about a very critical key part of what we and many people who are involved in both prepping and survivalism talk about on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, it is a bone of contention a lot of times, because there's a pretty broad set of beliefs depending upon who you speak to. And I find that oftentimes it has way more to do with how much real world experience people have as to which they're vociferously set on, as to whether you bug in, or in other words, survive in place, or bug out, which most people would refer to as running. So this can happen in a plethora of scenarios that run the gambit from a natural disaster, a tornado, a hurricane, all the way up through EMPs that come. I watch, and on the newsletter that I do, I watch every day the reports for the geomagnetic storms that we have. There's now a whole government website and operation that they paired off of NOAA, and they do nothing but track solar storms. So because these are really big, there have been lots of outages in radio and equipment around the world, and a lot more recently. It's been a high solar storm time. There are lots of preppers who have built their entire world and their whole prepping program around the idea of a CME, coronal mass ejection, that comes from the sun. It's like a large nuclear explosion.
Oh, wow.
And it basically beams neutrons and particles, protons, neutrons, and electrons at us, or wherever, spews, depending upon where it's aiming at the time, like a laser gun, shall we say, from the sun at us. And it happens quite frequently, and right now there's a series of storms that are going on there. It's cyclical, much like our weather, and it has played havoc and reaped havoc. In fact, there are many people who believe that that tornado slash straight line winds thing that we had a while back here in the Deptford area and hit all down through Washington Township and Williamstown down in Gretna and Greenwich Township and whatnot, was aligned with one of the worst CME events that have happened in the past 10 or 15 years.
Wow.
And it happened on that same day, which can seriously alter weather patterns and the like. So that's just one of many scenarios that people use. But what happens is it depends upon what the threat is as to part of your solution, as to whether you're going to try to survive in place or you're going to have to go. So how do we make a decision upon that? So if you're interested in following further, I have a couple of the buttons on the practice preparedness site already under the show notes for today's show. I will post the archive, the replay of it on there later on once we get done within an hour or so. But in the meanwhile, there are going to be buttons on there also, some videos about some of the things that we're going to talk about. So if you go there, just hack into the show notes section and look under today's date and the topic of bugging in or surviving in place, and you can kind of follow along or you can go down afterwards. That said, here's the deal. If you go over to my one of my sites, and there's a link at the top of the page at practicepreparedness.com, and on it, the top button on the left says visit our other websites. If you go to planfordisaster.com, on that site, you will find a whole pile of very solid disaster planning information in a pretty concise, straightforward manner that will give you an idea of how to create a disaster plan. I teach several classes on it. I actually teach it for companies a lot so that they can keep their businesses up online even when there is a disaster going on. It doesn't take a lot, but you have to think ahead. You can't wait until it's happening.
Right.
So once you have a disaster plan laid out, this is who, why, where, and when. For preppers, those of you who don't know, they use a couple terms. They're very common, TSHTF or SHTF, which stands for when the poop hits the fan, but to use another word. And
good
Tetewaki,
way to keep it PG there,
yep.
Will. Yeah.
And Tetewaki, which is the end of the world as we know it. Here's the deal. You'll see on the site when you go to the disaster planning area or on the front page, you'll see I have a whole section on this will never happen. When you go to practice survival,
okay,
on the front end under survival perspectives, I have several articles just about why you should, if you are a prepper or you are a survivalist, you should read those, because this is reality. Tetewaki will never happen. And why do I say that? Because after 30 years of doing investigations, going around the world, having lots of friends and cohorts who work with me and I work with them, who are emergency managers, who have been military overseas, we work together in teams both here and overseas. One thing you learn really rapidly, when the governmental structure fails, whether it's for one day, one week, or one year, or whatever, there are other groups of people who already have structures in place. Unfortunately, you think the government is bad? Try them on for size.
Right.
You know who we're talking about? Biker gangs, drug gangs,
yeah.
These kinds of people, MS-13, et cetera, et cetera. They have a very stringent structure. Mm-hmm. They don't work as anarchists. Uh-huh. They have top-down management. They have rules. You get out of line. The difference is they don't beat you up and bury you in paper. They kill you.
Right, right.
And in a situation where you could be in a place in 3 or 4 or 5 days where you have even your neighbors who you were friends with mm-hmm. roaming the street angry because they have no food and no water, mm-hmm. like happened during Sandy in places like Staten Island mm-hmm. and Long Island Beach and Sandy Hook and all along the East Coast between Long Island and down through the lower end of New Jersey, it's a disaster. And they do not get happy. And if they have kids, it's even worse.
Right.
And people will almost kill themselves, each other, fighting over a can of bean or the last bottle of water.
Oh, it's crazy.
And if you talk to people, if you know them, if you don't believe me, go talk to someone who you know who worked as a tree cutter or as an EMS down in Katrina. One of my regular students and helpers in the group, last night we were having a conversation. He's an EMS, highly skilled EMS guy. He was down with a team down in New Orleans for Katrina. They were there. They pulled them out with the military because their ambulance was getting shot up by people who they were trying to go help. This is reality.
Right.
Even when they were there to help, they were shooting at them. What were they going to do? Shoot them, kill them, and take the ambulance? How was that going to help? They're not skilled. They don't have the training. But this is where it gets to, unfortunately. And with that in mind, you have to realize that when you are going to survive, you need a team. Survival is a team sport. You'll see I have an article about that on Practice Survival. I'll put a link up to that area in the Survival Perspectives area. This is a key base rule. You cannot survive alone. You need a team. Right. What if you get hurt? What if you get tired? What if you need to go to sleep and people are roaming about and you need someone on point to watch to make sure they don't come and get you? You need more than one person and you need people who are able-bodied, who are able-minded, who are in control, they're not freaking out, who have skills, who are already trained in what to do. I'm not talking about military style. I'm talking about real world so that they can do it. That's what a disaster plan starts to do for you. So if you go to planfordisaster.com and look under disaster planning side, you'll see there's a whole series of tabs down the side that list out and tick off. Disaster plan creation, plan testing, building a team, preserving important documents. These are all key parts. Needless to say, you cannot do this 10 minutes before or the same day as I'm saying, oh, they're going to evacuate you. What are you going to do?
Right.
It's way too late. A lot of people who know me have heard me talk about this before, but when Sandy happened, Atlantic City had a great plan. Mm-hmm. It was survive in place.
Right.
They told everyone, hunker down, stay in your houses, we'll get back to you.
And they did good with it.
And, actually they didn't.
But really?
But
there was a lot of acclaim going around with that.
No.
Well, so then go.
Here's what happened. This is what happened.
All right.
So in the beginning, everything was cool.
Yeah.
And so they had everyone stay in place. Why? Because unlike the imbeciles who tore apart Katrina, fact of the matter is, the only way when you have, say, the average police force in an average town, there may be 50 police officers.
Okay.
To cover 156 hours.
Yeah.
And that includes desk people, like dispatchers and whatnot. So if you pair them off, you're probably down to 35.
Right.
To cover all the way around the clock,
okay.
7 days a week.
That's a lot. Yeah,
that's a lot of strain and a lot of stress. And then you add in the fact that you're in a disaster scenario, and then you add in that's generally one or two officers on at night, like a supervisor and a regular patrolman,
right.
And all of a sudden you need 10 on.
Right.
What are you going to do? You're in trouble. So they start pulling 12-hour shifts, and they start falling out, and they start getting exhausted, and they start making mistakes because they're human.
Yeah.
So what do? You move everyone into a place like the Superdome.
Okay.
Where 246 rapes happen in the first 2 days in the Superdome. While almost all the police were manned around it. What are you going to do? You have hundreds, thousands of people in the Superdome.
It's a lot.
It's impossible. It's an impossible task. But the mental perspective is, from a simple management standpoint, is it better for me to have, say, 10 officers on duty and 150,000, 200,000 people in all their respective houses? And if a problem happens, I have to race them there through knee-deep water or worse, or down trees where they can't get there? Or do I move them all to somewhere where we can put everyone there and put all my guys there and be realistic about it?
Right.
So for their standpoint, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Preppers freak out, and you see hundreds of websites and hundreds of YouTubes out there all the time about, oh, you know, our president's going to declare. I saw one today. I had to laugh. It was done in October, and the guy was so serious and so absolute. I would have taken it down if I was him.
Really?
But, you know, he was talking about that we were going to be in martial law no later than October 31st. Sorry, we are now in January of 2016. I probably would have taken that down. I don't know. Predictive analysis and such.
Probably a good idea.
Probably not a good idea.
Right.
So the problem is, it's so easy to get wrapped up in the fear factor when people start talking about these things, because people are not prepared. And when you're not prepared, fear is what fills the void. If you're prepared, you're busy.
Right.
You say, okay, let me get my gear. Let me do this. Let me hunker down. Let me cover my windows. Let me put tape here. Let me put boards up there. Let me make sandbags if I'm in a low area. These are where these things start to come together. So what happens? We start talking about what are you going to do? Are you going to survive in place, or are you going to bug out? And there are a number of complicated scenarios.
Right.
Lots of people tell me, and I Jeep, and I play with my Jeep in the mud down in the Pine Barrens, so I'm a solid redneck, and it's all good.
Cool.
And I've also been corporate, so I can play both sides of the coin. And I love my time in the woods, but here's reality. Everybody I know that lives down that way, Chatsworth, whatever, all down in that whole entire area, all the way down to Atlantic City, tell me that if the SHTF... happened, they're running to Wharton State Forest and Bass River State Forest because they'll live off the deer and the fish and everything's awesome, and they'll build a fort and blah blah. Them and about 2 million other people who live in the state of New Jersey south of, say, Trenton. So the problem's going to be, it's going to get to be a really crowded, stinky, smelly place. Because people don't know what to do.
Right.
Last night we were actually talking about hygiene, which is one of my big topics for survivalism that I think is way underplayed. Because you can talk about guns and bullets and blah, blah, but in the end, you can have all that, and if you're not taking care of yourself in 3 or 4 days, you're going to be sick and dying because you're either dehydrated or have the runs and now are dehydrated or are sick and non-functional, so you can't do anything to protect yourself because you can't function.
Okay.
So having these skills are critical if you really intend to be prepared, because if you read the news and you look around the world, even with all the crap going on right now, the number of people who are dealing with Tetewaki events in their world. Now, of course, you know, if you fall off the top of the Empire State Building, it's Tetewaki for you. It's the end of the world as you know it. You're going to see the world a whole different way, maybe on 3 or 4 streets at the same time. But your world's over. But in the real world, for people in general, in society, the likelihood that you're going to see that happen is nil.
Okay.
Or so small that the threat of that and spending all of your activity to prepare for that is an utter waste. Because if you do the things that it takes to do a disaster plan for things like a hurricane, like tornadoes if you live in the central areas of the United States, if you prepare for an earthquake, even here, we had a 5.9 a few years ago, And there's probably more to come because we sit on a couple of very large faults out here. People don't even know we're on. These things happen. You can read about them. Wildfires and other problems, flooding and hurricanes. You can prepare for that, and the same preps that you use for that will allow you to be prepared for an even more severe problem like a SHTF situation that might last, or what preppers refer to as raw, like without rule of law, for 30, 40, 90 days. Now, the problem comes in is this. Are you at lowland? If you live in Carney's Point or down by, say, one of my favorite places, Fort Mott, and your house is 3 feet below sea level, then staying there when you're going to have a hurricane hit is probably not a really good idea. Right. So having a plan to go to family who are on high ground or in another state inland is a really great idea. Losing a couple days of work when they're probably going to be shut down anyway is neither here nor there if you're stranded on the top of your house and you get some funky disease because you're waiting around in water that's overflowed sewer and the like that may permanently alter your alter your entire life as you know it from there on out if you get sick. There have been several really strange and unusual bugs, viruses and whatnot, bacterial attacks that came on people who were working, helping people down in Katrina, right, who went down and they suffer permanent life-changing ailments from what's in the water that they get affected in. Well, they think they're helping by trudging around with their bare feet or in boots and get all soaked by it, and it has fecal matter in it and all kinds of other things that have washed up. It's a big deal. So you don't want to put yourself there.
Right.
So knowing whether you bug out or stay in is crucial because you can make those choices based upon where you live, where depending upon what the threats are. So you know if they tell you there's a hurricane coming and you see it strike Delaware and you're just over the Delaware River, yeah, it's probably a really good idea to exercise option B and leave your house. So if you're going to do that and you're going to bug out, how are you going to do that? If you are prepared, and there are lots of people who take my classes and others out there who have lots of food, lots of supplies, lots of gear. Yeah. And where is it? In their garage, in their basement, in 50 tubs on shelves, neatly marked and identified. And if you have 2 hours because the weather wasn't going to hit you and now all of a sudden it's going to,
right,
and you need to get out, how are you going to do that? So this is a key portion. This is why, by the way, I have another article under the Survival Perspectives under practicesurvival.com where I talk about refugees and the fact that if you are bugging out and you don't have a plan, you are a refugee. It's entitled, actually, No Bug Out Plan Equals Refugee. Because the fact of the matter is, if you are forced to evacuate, which they can do and will do for pretty darn good reasons a lot of times, then you need to have an idea of what the heck you're going to do when that happens. Mm-hmm. And if you wait until the moment they come down the street with the loudspeaker on the police car or on the fire truck going, you must leave immediately, and they're going around knocking on your door and then spray painting a red X on the front door to tell the firemen and all that they've already evacuated that house, you're going to be in a world of trouble.
Yeah.
So you need to be prepared. I do a bug out trailer. So all my gear, if I'm going camping, it's already in there.
Yeah.
If I'm going to bug out, my gear is already in there. I have cooking, stove, tools, equipment, tents. I can sleep in the trailer if I have to, if the weather is so inclement or if the conditions are bad, like bad people, whatever.
Right.
And I don't want to be in a tent outside. I can be in the steel trailer with a chromoly frame.
Right.
These are options, but you can't make those options 2 hours before you evacuate.
Right.
You have to do that way ahead of time. So with that in mind, you have to consider the fact that these things are why we plan. These are the real reasons why we plan. So Let's touch a couple of other subjects real quickly on bugging out and staying in place. Okay. I talked about it before several ago when I talked about hygiene on the show. This is what happens. You decide to stay in. You are at the bottom of the hill in your neighborhood. There are 10 houses above you on the street. Your neighbors are like, oh, this sucks. We have water, but we don't have any. We don't have water, but we have the generator, so we have lights, we have candles, we're good. And it rained outside, so we put buckets outside. So now we're going to take 5-gallon paint buckets and pour some of the water down the toilet, and we'll flush our poop down the toilet, and off it goes.
Right.
Until you find out that if the sewer plant is either A, saturated because they're normally right by the water, because after they process the sewage, they pump the effluent back out into the streams, mm-hmm. and now the streams are backing up to the level of the sewer plant, and suddenly it's not functioning, so they shut it down because they don't want to accidentally discharge sewage, raw sewage untreated into the environment and taint the water table, so they shut it down, and the pipes start filling up. And then the fuel runs out after the first day on the diesel generators. Anyone who lives in the Deptford area, if you go down the street, you see one of the sewer pumps that's down at the bottom of the hill right by the overpass of 42 on Clemens Bridge Road. When the fuel runs out on that diesel generator, if the power's not up, the sewer pump stops pumping, and the sewage that has come downhill now flushes back uphill as it builds and builds in the pipes. Right. And suddenly it's in your bathroom and in your bathtub, and you have all your neighbor's fun stuff in your bathroom, and God forbid you have your washer and dryer down in the basement and a wash tub, and you don't have a good, really strong backflow valve on it, because the first place it's going to fill is there and then your basement. Mm-hmm. And it happens all the time. One of my friends in West Deptford had it happen several years ago when it flooded, and the fecal matter from the sewage came up through the drain in the shower and in the floor in the bathroom and filled 6 inches of the lower bottom of the entire lower level of their house. It's a train wreck. And no matter what you do, when it gets cleaned out, you still know there's some residual of that in the walls, even if you cut out everything. So here's the deal. You don't want to be there to experience it. Insurance pays for that. If you don't have insurance, then you got other issues. But the bottom line is, all survival is mobile survival. If you don't consider in that you have to be mobile in order to survive, you lose. So when you look at that, you have to realize, and I have an article under the bugging out section of all survival is mobile. And the whole purpose of the exercise is to recognize the fact that you may think you're going to stay because you're going to hold your ground because it's your house.
Right.
Wendy, who's a regular caller, she's doing a class on Thursday for her pent class. If you're a meetup and you live down in the Woodstown area, I highly recommend going down there. She's going to be doing a class on winter survival on her pent class. That's P-E-N-T. She's doing a class down there. And we were having a conversation about it and while she was preparing her presentation. And one of the things we talked about was the idea that she has at her house, she has a generator with a standby switch, so she can switch over to the generator. She can run her well pump.
Yeah.
And she has septic, so unless it's flooded, she has a functional sewage system. The question was posed, could she stay in the time of a disaster evacuation? Well, that all depends. Is it a disaster evacuation because the power's down, so they're making people go to a safe zone? But if they have it, they're good? Or will the police say, excuse me, how much fuel do you have? That'll last you a day. And then when the conditions are worse, you're going to be calling on 911 begging for us to come save you, and I'm going to put two officers or an EMS at threat of their life and limb to come save you because you were stupid enough to stay here. If your power is down and they determine that the conditions won't be worthy they can do something which is a simple, it's already in the code. I checked several, including the ones down that end where they live, that in the code and the ordinance in the town, the code official can merely pull the CO, the certificate of occupancy on the house, and by law, they have the right to evict you immediately from that property for unsafe living conditions. What do you do then? And remember, you can't really blame them in the sense that after you reason with them, if they still feel like they're going to be at risk because you're there, then you're in trouble because they're going to make you leave. So right. What is your contingency plan? And when we come back after my little commentary on one of our sponsors, we're going to talk a little bit about why this is a danger unless you set out your bug out location, destination ahead of time. But before we do that, I want to tell you that we thank our sponsor, who is our stalwart sponsor, one of our sponsors for the show. It's MaxServe. They are an all-encompassing Apple product consultant company. They're based out of Belmar. You can call my friend over there, Sam. He's the founder of the company. He started in 1997. They're based in Belmar. Their number is 888-818-MACS. And you can also hit them online at their website, which is MACServe.com. They do everything Apple. So if you have an iPhone or an iPad, if you have a Mac or any other Apple product that needs to be configured, if you're having issues with virus protection or any other thing that you need, point of sale systems, etc., he'll set up your servers, whatever you need, your graphics servers. Give him a call. Give Sam a call. Tell him we sent you. It's 888-818-MACS. They're great people, and they've been doing it for a long time. They can get you through the effort. What's the trouble to sit back and have them take care of it for you for a nominal fee rather than waste days of downtime fiddling and in aggravation and non-functionality? Give them a call. So now let's get back into a little bit about why you need a real bug out plan. So when you go to do a bug out, you can't just say, gee, I'm going to get in the car and leave. Where are you going to go? Like I said before, it's not going to work for you to go and head off into the sunset to go to the local park. Because by the way, you may not know it, but in the state of New Jersey, for instance, on the back of the form that you sign for for your permit to get in to stay in, say, Warden State Forest or Bass River, it tells you you're not allowed to exceed 15 days. That it's actually a felony now in the state of New Jersey to stay in a state park because you're taking up residence. We had met someone down in the woods there 2 years ago, and she had lost her home in a bad divorce, was basically left with nothing. She was very resourceful, had all kinds of camping and survival gear. Her father had taught her well. She was in her 60s. She was working to find a job. She had actually found one. And she was hopping from state park to state park. And she'd do 5 days in this one and 5 days in that one. And then finally, someone came to her and said, we know what you're doing. And they tried to arrest her. They actually rousted her out. She ended up staying in a truck stop and was molested by someone in the truck stop. It's a big problem if you don't have a plan. So last night I was having a conversation with someone I'm friends with who attends my classes. I hadn't seen her in a while. She had been away for a while. Her family had gone down into West Virginia. They're setting up basically, for simplification purposes, a communal living operation. They're living off grid. And she was imparting to me about the fact that when they got down there, they were so appalled by the conditions there. There was no work, there was no money, there was a heavy drug problem there because it was so bad, the current situation is so bad down there financially that it's completely intractable. And as a result, imagine if they had gone down there cold and thought they were going to go in there and walk their family into that mess. It would be a train wreck. We have a caller. How you doing? Hello.
Hi, Will. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
So now you work as a among other things, you do code official work, right?
We do.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, in your situation, if you have a disaster, a natural disaster, what is the base plan for the OEM in the town in order to both protect the first responders and the people that you're responsible for?
So we'll
take
care of the community as best we can. We have to remember that
Uh-oh. Jim, we got to keep you close to the mic because you're fading in and out.
Sorry.
No problem.
Better?
Yep.
So, you have to remember that the Office of Emergency Management staff in most municipalities and even in the state government and even the regional offices are pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
So, trying to deal with some kind of an event or disaster, there is much more people in the community than there are of us to actually go out and physically help them,
mm-hmm.
which makes it, you know, pretty difficult if we're getting a lot of requests all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So, I heard you saying earlier about, you know, being asked to leave your home, and you know, you kind of get into occupancy permits.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Or when people are allowed to stay in their homes. A lot of municipalities have rules and regulations specific to try and protect people during those times. Things like health departments is that you have to have running water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just be dumping you know, feces or urine in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have running, you know, basically some kind of running water and a way to get rid of your running water.
Mm-hmm.
The building code says that you have to have heat in your home, 68 degrees, 3 feet off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Without those things, a municipality can come and say, look, you guys legally need to go. Different states have different rules on mandatory evacuations. And I will tell you, trying to do a mandatory evacuation is really almost impossible. You know, people are always going to say, hey, I'm staying in my home.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, you know, they have to decide on how committed they are in that process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've gone out to different places and say, hey, there's a wall of water coming down the creek. You guys need to leave because you're not going to be able to do that. And people stay until water reaches second floor.
Yeah.
On their home.
And then they call you, and then you have to put your people at risk to go save them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, what we tell people is, hey, look, you know, I can't make you leave your home, but let me just be perfectly clear. I have a couple of options. One is that if I feel that it's unsafe to put the emergency responders with the boat in the water because it's moving too fast, there's a lot of debris in the water, we may not be able to come and help you. And so when you call for help, it may actually be too late.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that a couple of times.
I know you and I have talked before on other subjects about it, like, for instance, with wildfires. If they haven't made it so you can fit the truck down the lane to get there safely, then you're not going to be able to get there to stop their house from burning down.
Right. There's a whole myriad, depending on what the disaster actually is. You know, where we live in this area, you know, in New Jersey, there's the Pine Barrens and the wildfires. There's a lot of flooding to this area just because of the nature of the storms and the how overbuilt the communities actually are. You know, when you put impervious surface and the ground can't accept the water anymore, and the trees and the grass and the brush and the shrubs are not there to actually take the water and use it, then it starts to rise. So we see a lot of flooding up in the Northeast Corridor. You know, same thing with winter storms. We see a lot of winter storms. Yep. Everybody has to have a general thought process in mind of, when realistically can I stay in my home?
Right. That's what's so critical, is to actually recognize, because, you know, there are lots of people, especially, and I'm not bashing them, but because they tend to be the group that I've heard it from the most, of these ardent preppers who say, basically, I'm not going, they can't make me, the big bad government can't make me. It's not about big bad government. It's about you, in your end, in the OEM side, have a responsibility to be able to protect them, and you can only do so much. So if they're going to be outside of those boundaries, then they're going to put themselves at massive risk. And what we're trying to do is take people to a place where they're not going to be at risk.
Right. You know, honestly, everybody has to be ready to leave where they are and be realistic about that. When can I stay? When do I have to go? When is it safe for me to go? Is it no longer safe for me to go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of questions that are there, and there's no one magic bullet that addresses all of that. I wish I had that, but yeah. I don't.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, winter storms come, they knock out the power. How long can you stay in your home when you don't have heat? We get that all the time. We'll get 70, 80-year-old ladies calling into the Emergency Operations Center saying, hey, look, I don't have heat. I can't stay here anymore. And it's as simple as saying, ma'am, do you have a fireplace in your home? Yeah, but I can't get outside to get the wood. The snow's too high, or I'm just, you know, physically unable to do that. Well, ma'am, hang on. You know, I'll send one of the guys in the Emergency Operations Center, whether it be a fire guy or emergency medical service guy or a police officer, we'll send somebody out. We'll get you a fire going in your fireplace, you know, and that'll warm up your home.
Mm-hmm.
They try to give people a little bit of that self-reliance, you know, because then nobody wants to be in a shelter until it's the absolute last resort. You know, my wife says I snore all the time. You know, imagine 30 other people in a pretty small room that echoes really well, all snoring in unison. Nobody wants to be there. So we try, but when we come and say, look, this is it, you know, it's really time to go, a lot of times, it's really time to go. You know, that doesn't mean you got to go to a shelter. Have a plan. Talk to a friend who lives out of the area that's not being affected. You know, find a hotel, you know, over in Pennsylvania or someplace that you know that has a generator that will power up and run, and you know, you can live in the lap of luxury for a couple of days.
Right. Well, and of course, you know, the problem, of course, is that you mentioned it, and we kind of have a saying, which is you have to know when to pull the trigger. So the question becomes, if you wait to pull the trigger too long, then you're going to be in trouble, because there's a plethora of stories still out there online, excuse me, from January 2014, some unbelievable pictures of the highways coming out of Atlanta after that gigantic snow and ice storm they had. They had 3/4 of an inch of ice, 10 inches of snow in Atlanta area. They literally were totally bound solid, 4 and 5 lanes wide, as far as the eye could see, in 50-mile direction, all around the city, trying to get out, with pileups on the traffic. People abandoned their vehicles in Atlanta and the surrounding areas and just walked out, and they had nothing. They had video of them in wingtips and suits, leaving their car to go traipsing 10 inches of snow with no gloves, light coats, and nothing. Why? Because they're not prepared. It's a train wreck. And this is why being able to know, do you go or do you assess and say, nope, we waited too long, we're going to have to figure something else out. Because it, like you said, there's a plethora of things that come into play. Can you get out? When can you get out? When should you get out? You said what I agree with, which is, it's looking really bad. It's already hitting Delaware. We'll say, maybe we're going to go visit Aunt blah blah in Pennsylvania for a couple days and stay with them, or get a hotel out there and go to the whatever flea bag inn for 2 days. At least you're good to go, you can do something, you're not stuck and in trouble. This is the problem. But the real problem comes is if you've exceeded that point and now you can't go. You and I, we have trailers that are loaded. Not everybody has that. They can have bins, though, in their garage or their whatever, so they can just tote them out in 10 or 15 minutes and load them in their vehicle and go. That said, you have to be pretty darn organized and on it. And then you have to have left in time to not burn your entire tank of fuel sitting in a line trying to get out.
You know, and that's really critical. Andrew really set a lot of bars. Mm. When that hurricane came into Florida, I think it was 92.
I'm so glad. I was going to talk about it. That's awesome. That's awesome.
There were cars backed up, running out of gas, stuck on the highway. Just something as simple as saying, yep, the highway's backed up, I'm not taking that way, I'm going to go an alternative route.
Well,
knowing that before you actually have it. Actually having a hard map in your car.
Yeah, there you go. Not a GPS, but a physical map. And that's, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because that is a really important piece. You know, nobody has road atlases anymore in their vehicle. I grew up, we had a road atlas all the time. I have one in every vehicle and every pack.
Yeah, I mean, some of the most basic things are the most critical things that we don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most important things is put a plan together and then try it.
Yeah.
And, get to a place that you're not familiar with, find yourself on the map and say, okay, how am I going to get there?
Yeah, well, and the other thing, so like with that particular instance in Florida, one of the things with that was really remarkable was they tried to be proactive. So they pushed people to go, and when they did, then what happened was they evacuated, I think it was Tampa area, and when they did, what happened is the people all got on I-75, went north, and then when that happened, they changed it, the storm shifted, and it hit higher. And it actually whacked the people right who were the ones who were actually sitting in traffic tied up that you were talking about.
Right.
They were then in the deadline center. They had no water, no food. They were pooping on people's lawns. They were down in the woods. They were doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And the funny thing was, there were some interesting things that did come out of it. One of my friends was down there on I-75 when it happened, and there was a tractor trailer. He had run out of fuel, and it was a reefer truck, and it was loaded with hot dogs. So they cracked it out, and some guy had his redneck whatever truck had a grill in the back, and they started grilling hot dogs for everybody that was on the road for the next 5 hours.
Nice.
You know, so there are funny stories that come out of it, because people do actually rise to the occasion, you know? That said, you don't want to be in that position. And the way you don't get in that position is to have, like we both said, a plan to be proactive about it, be set up so that when you actually come down to it, you're not panicking. It's a decisive set of motions. You have plan A, plan B, plan C. The military always says that every battle plan is perfect until the first boot hits the ground. if you can't adapt as you go along, you're going to die. That's basically what's going to happen.
Right. You know, if you look at a lot of these other countries where disasters are common everyday occurrences, one of the things that they say is movement is life.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not prepared and not able to move, you're going to get stuck in some place you don't want to be, and things are going to become really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that you always got to go, but you always have to be ready to go.
Yeah. And, you know, and the thing about it is that when, you know, when you come down to it, that's how we start breaking it out. So we look at what vehicle are you going to use to bug out with, because a lot of people who are preppers and survivalists start looking at big vehicles with tactical skills like four-wheel drive and all that. Sometimes that's great because you can push your way through things that are challenging. The flip side of it is, if you have a ways to go, if you don't have a lot of fuel with you, you're going to have a really bad day because there's not going to be fuel available, and they suck fuel like no tomorrow. So it becomes a balancing act. A trailer, a bug-out trailer, it's hard to move around when you're tagging along a trailer, but at the same time, if you have all your gear with you and you were able to leave 2 hours earlier, then that's killer too. So the question becomes, you know, where do you start to level? And these are all personal choices that you make based upon how it goes from there, you know? And so then you have to have your destination set. And you have to have a route planned. And for those of you who are members of AAA, then AAA is a really great thing, because the great thing about AAA is you can actually get them to plan you a route for free. And they'll give you the strip maps for your route to wherever you want to go, and they'll plan it out for you. And you can do 10 or 12 of them. There's no end to that, no matter what. And you know, and that's another means for people who aren't highly skilled with a map or route planning that they can use. And you can tell them you want to take the scenic route or whatever, or avoid interstates and such. And they'll map that whole thing out for you. So anything else you can think of that we didn't touch on?
Yes, that's it. You have a great night.
I appreciate it. Thank you for hopping in for me. I appreciate it. You're always a great help. And you, and oh, by the way, tell the minions I said hello.
I absolutely will. See you later on.
Bye-bye now. Okay, so now here's one last thing that I wanted to touch on the bugging out thing. If you're going to bug out, think about Katrina as an example. Here's what happens. You had people who were evacuated by FEMA out of the New Orleans area, dislodged from their home. And they moved from their home. They ended up, a lot of them, in Pennsylvania even. Do you know that over two-thirds of them never moved back? Smart move, if you ask me. I mean, I don't know. Something about going back and rebuilding where there's you're 7 feet below sea level is probably not a good thing. But and the whole thing about it is that when you're looking at that, you have to look at the next step, which is you have to realize that you need money when you get there. Most people are not well healed enough to be able to take care of themselves once they get past. You know, it took 35 days for FEMA to get checks to people for disaster relief after the storm. 35 days. How far would the money that you have in your pocket go to get you food and shelter for those first days? How far would that money get you gas in your vehicle if you were lucky enough to get out of the disaster zone? How well would you do?
Right.
How much money do you have in the bank right now compared to how much money that would take you? Mm-hmm. Granted, you're not going to be paying utilities and you're not going to pay your rent or your mortgage wherever you are, whatever, but you're going to have those expenses every day. You're going to be eating out. Right. You're going to be cooking and you're in a place you don't know. You're going to have overhead. Where is that money going to come from? And that's why having real skills, mm-hmm, that equate to real income are important, Because in a major disaster like Katrina, like Andrew, like Sandy, people get dislodged. You need to be able to hit the ground running unless you're, you know, really wealthy, and then you can just tap your bank account. But most people don't have that option. Right. So what are you going to do? And by the way, what are you going to do if you're still there, but the place you work isn't? Now you're SOL because you're out of money, right, and you're out of a job. And you can't get unemployment because they're too busy handling the disaster, and it'll take 30 to 60 days to cycle that. And then you have to go to the relief funds and so forth and so on. So what do? You grow skills. I have mechanical skills. I used to own a garage. I worked in as an auto mechanic, right, so I can do that. I blacksmith. I can make things. I do woodworking. I can make and repair things. I can repair vehicles. I can do lots of household things. I know how to do electrical. I know how to do plumbing. If people need help, I have two really good chainsaws. They go in my gear that goes with me. If people need trees cut to clear roads, I can get paid to do that and turn that an income. What do you currently have as a prepper or a survivalist or just a general person who thinks they can weather the storm? What do you have to be able to help yourself not sit there with no money in your pockets and no means to be able to take care of yourself and your family? If your answer to yourself now is nothing, then you have from now until the next disaster happens to do something about it. That's the critical part. You need to realize that you are in control and you're not a victim as long as you decide to do something about it. Right. If you wait until the last minute, you will put on that mantle of victimhood, and victim equals no control, no say about how you live, how you work. You're going to be complaining about being stuck in a shelter. Well, you were the one who decided not to do anything when you had the time. Yeah. Forgo that cruise and get yourself some food and some shelter and maybe a little trailer so you can maybe go camping with it and take your kayaks on it or whatever, and get some skills so you know how to handle yourself without the general accoutrements of day-to-day life. But if you wait again till the last minute, those are all off the table. So what have we covered? Making a disaster plan, right? Making a disaster plan, right. Making a bug out plan, finding and identifying a bug out destination. This is your end point. Do you have family somewhere where you can be welcome? Start visiting them. Be friends with them. Right. Put some spare food. Leave some clothes with them. Visit them enough that they don't care. Right. Toss them a couple bucks so you have a room in the back of their house. Or ask them to park your camper on their property so that if you had to go, you won't hate each other 5 minutes later, because now you're going to be in a position where you can actually say, I'm out here. Yeah. We just need to borrow your bathroom and shower once in a while so you don't smell us out here and everything's good. And this gives you options, but you have to plan. So when you're doing that, start looking at the fact, like, I don't know, it's really cool to have a Prius and brag that you get 51 miles a gallon. But if you have to bug out and you're surrounded by tractor trailers on the highway and they're all, you know, 12 and a half feet, 13 feet high, and your car doesn't come to my waist, right, you're going to have a really uncomfortable time sitting in traffic for 10 hours trying to get out. Yeah. And the other part of it is, can't tow a trailer, and how much gear are you going to get in that Prius? What's it have as a load rating for you? Do you know that the average car has less than a 200-pound load rating?
Really?
That when you look at it, they rate the car based upon four 200-pound people.
Really?
That's based upon that. And then after it, their bearings start going bad because it's carrying too much weight for their bearings to carry.
Wow.
When I redid the bearings on my truck, I used heavy duties and upped it from the stock 3800 to over 6000.
Wow.
Unfortunately for me, with all my gear in it all the time, it probably weighs 50 to 100.
Yeah.
So I probably get a give or take of one other person and a little bit more stuff that's not in there normally. That said, where would you be if you were driving in a highway and it came apart? So these are some things to leave to think you for you to, yeah, well, I'll be all right. I'm going to leave you to think about.
A little
tongue
twister there.
And you can go to practicepreparedness.com. In about an hour, we'll have the show replay on there, and there will be lots of links on there. Go to Plan for Disaster. You can find that off of the links. Till next time, I'm Will Hemingway, and I also invite you to go join our friends over at the Meadows Diner in Blackwood on the Black Horse Pike. So until next time, I am Will Hemingway, practicepreparedness.com. We're out of here. Be safe and be prepared.
A song of love that clings to me.